Hello, everyone, and welcome to the penultimate episode of This Week in Quality of the Year. I started saying penultimate because my team lead loves saying that this past few months of everything that is, like, the second to last. I'm sorry about that. I don't remember which number episode it is. But hey, the penultimate one does count as well. I'm here with the fantastic Ben Doan, the full Hello. Smack tester, and I'm Demi, and we will be your hosts for this episode of This Week in Quality. So welcome, everyone.
What a great introduction, Demi. Yes, and a quick reminder, this is a Ministry of Testing event, and the Code of Conduct is in place if you should care to join us a little bit later on stage. And if you do want to join us, you should see a link hanging around somewhere where you can join as a panelist. And when you come on stage, you can adhere to that Code of Conduct. And hello to those of us who are listening on the podcast. You will have a very good idea which number episode this is, because it will be right there in the title for you, so you get that for free. Demi, tell us a little bit about yourself. For those listeners who haven't met the fantastic Demi, mother of quality, presser of buttons, tester of dragons.
Okay, so first of all, so everyone knows, Ben just keeps making up new titles for me every time we do this. So these have not been confirmed. But okay. So I am a test engineer and test lead in Belgium. I also recently started doing some quality manager activities. So I'm expanding to the quality leader role as well a bit. And of course, I haven't been a tester actually for very long, but I'm not actually allowed to use that very often anymore ever since I did a talk at Modicon this year. So I was a speaker at a conference. So ever since then, I'm apparently not allowed to use my meager number of experience years anymore. But other than that, yeah, I'm doing great. It was been very busy the past few months, so I've been a bit less present here in the Modiverse. But I was able to pencil in some time for this episode because, oh my God, how much has been going on. And I really did want to do one more before the end of the year. I've been finishing up some testing. I started front-end test automation. I went to the last tester meetup in Belgium of the year. So that's also fun. There was a one-day conference last month that I attended. There was some lean coffee happening here at the Modiverse that I snuck into as an audience member. And there's been some testing of Christmas lights going on, as one of my Christmas lights had apparently been causing some electrical shortages. So I've been doing some testing at home as well. So as you can see, there's a lot going on in my life with testing. So yeah, I hope everyone now knows who your host is. So how about, Ben, you introduce yourself as well.
Thank you very much, Demi. That's great. I can add at least one new title to you now, Demi, which is the full spark tester. If you're electrical testing with the lights, let's go with that.
Oh, no.
So yeah, just before I introduce myself, it looks like confirmation from Simon there that it is episode 116, 116. So there you go. For those of you who are keeping track, that is the episode number today. Yeah, so my name is Ben Doan, also known as the full snack tester, not to be confused with the full stack tester, although I definitely do full stack testing in my day job as a lead quality engineer. I have also had the pleasure of speaking at Moticon. I did a talk in Brighton earlier this year, and I've previously run workshops at last year's Brighton Test Bash, as it was then. And you can find me in many places across the internet and definitely around the Motiverse. I really enjoy the opportunity to co-host This Week in Testing. So I've done it a fair few times now. It's one of my little treats on a Friday. So if anyone is interested in getting up on stage, let me just see if I can get it up. Hey, there we go. So for those of you watching live as well as listening live, you should be able to see the other slide on the screen, which introduces you the join the stage queue button. So for any of you who are interested in joining the stage queue, you can read those instructions, and do bear in mind that when you click the join stage queue button, it will load up in a new window, and you'll have to close this one and load the other one so that you've not got the audio twice, because that will wind you up. So I have a topic, Demi, and I know we discussed this a little bit backstage, but I'd love to talk to you about what on earth is real anyway. So I was just telling Demi backstage that I just had a delivery. I won't mention which courier, but I had a delivery, and they tried to deliver me two parcels, two little packages. And one of them was to me in my name, and the other one was to one of my neighbors in their name at a different address. And when I said, "Oh no, I can't take this one, that's for my neighbor, can you please give it to them?" She said, "Oh yes, but it's wrong. On my system, it says to deliver it here." So she scanned the barcode and she showed me that it definitely had the address number 12, and it should be, even though on the printed label it said number 13. I'm like, "Yeah, but that's their name, that's not my name, can you please give it to them?" And they had to take some convincing to actually go and take the parcel to the right place, because the computer said something different, which I thought was a really interesting faith in the computer system over what was printed in text right in front of her. Demi, I think you have a similar issue when it comes to speed signs on the road.
Oh, yes.
In your car.
So my car, like, recently got a new car, and it's a bit smarter than my old one. So it has these, it recognizes, like, the signs on the road, like how fast you can drive. But for some reason, it isn't very good at, like, recognizing when the speed limit has ended. So we have some signs that simply say, like, this specific speed limit has ended, so now the general rules apply. So it doesn't recognize those, which is a problem in itself. But also, just when I leave the house, it doesn't know what speed to take until it reaches, like, a sign that says what speed is allowed from that point on. So it always seems to come up with a new number. So I've had anything from 30 kilometers an hour to 90 kilometers an hour at just, like, leaving my house, and none of them are correct. So it hasn't actually have sent me the correct speed limit from my street when I leave the house, which is very weird. I even know at some point there was a street where you can actually only drive like 30 or 50 kilometers an hour, and it told me, "Oh, you can drive 120 here." And I'm like, "What are you talking about, car?" Well, I don't trust it at all. It is very confusing. So, yeah, I'm not sure how far we are in that technology, but...
Wow, see, it's a really good exploration, isn't it, in terms of the user experience, the user interaction, where something that's meant to be there for your convenience to help you out, really it's getting in your way. Like, it's really telling you all the wrong things, so much that you really, I think trust is the right word there. You just can't trust it, right? Because so many times it can be wrong. All of a sudden, you can't trust anything it tells you because it's just making things up. I think that's it's a fascinating reflection. See, the interesting thing in the UK, for those of you who don't know, is that in many places, there isn't necessarily a very good exact register of which roads have which speed limits. I think for more modern roads, that's not necessarily true anymore, but it definitely used to be the case historically. So for a long time, I don't know if this is still 100% correct, I'll caveat that, it used to be that effectively the speed limit sign that's on the road is the legal limit, whatever that is. So if you get the signage wrong, the speed of the road changes. It's like the signage is the speed limit, which is an interesting thing. And we got some great little comments in the chats. Judy Mosey says, "I wonder if the postperson in this type of environment where the goal is to deliver to the correct house versus following what the system tells you to do." Yeah, it's an interesting thing, right? Where, what is the motivation? What is their training?
Good, yeah, maybe question. Their approval criteria are delivered to the house that the computer tells them. So,
absolutely. That might be exactly what they're told to do. If there's a mistake anywhere else, it might not be their problem. AD says, "There's a running joke on the show Little Britain. Computers know." Yes, there is. That's true.
I don't know that show, but now I want to watch it just so I can see, like, this sketch.
Don't have to watch the whole show. If you search for Little Britain Computers Know on your favorite video platform, such as YouTube. I'm sure you can find the clip. The clip is funny enough, but in essence, it's a caricature of a person sat at a computer and typing things and just going, no, computers know. What else we got? Helene says, ours often gets confused by parallel roads. So it's told me a couple of times that I'm only allowed to do 30 on the motorway. Yeah, that's a good one.
And Martin's is actually even more dangerous because apparently their car has like a built-in system that it wants to correct whatever you're doing to whatever it notices about the signs. So when it suddenly sees like a side street that has a slower speed, the car slows down on their own, which is like completely dangerous, I think. What?
And the more we get assistive technologies and autonomous cars, the more that we're going to need to invest in our road signage being accurate, concise, and visible, because otherwise you haven't got a human there to interpret what's going on. I think it's a fascinating thing, right? How much the human brain can completely assess a situation quickly and react correctly most of the time, even when the data presented to them is absolutely bonkers. That's a really interesting thing, isn't it?
Definitely. And it seems that Richard also has something very weird going on about all kinds of parcels being delivered to him that aren't on his name or anyone he knows. But then he found out that someone is using his address for handling returns of fraudulent products for some reason. What is going on there, Rich?
Oh, Richard, if you want to join us on stage, I'd love to hear more about that story. That sounds awful, but also really interesting. That is cool. It's not cool. It's awful, but interesting. Very interesting.
I mean, I remember my aunt recently, like, she had a package delivered, and her husband got really mad, like, what have you ordered this time? And apparently, like, it was some kind of children's toy. So she was so confused because she hadn't ordered anything. And her husband was like, how many things do you order? And it was apparently her son who was on vacation and wanted to order a package. And he just decided to put his mom's address without telling her. So that was the children's toys explained. But she was so confused about all this and like messaging people around, like, have you sent a package to my house for some reason? So, yeah.
That's a good one. But at least that's a friendly outcome where it was someone in the family, right? Like, that's not so bad. It's way better than Richard's problem of having someone fraudulently sending them returns. That's bad. That really is a problem.
Let's see. Oh, AD says something about when sat-navs first came out, folks drove into lakes and fields because the sat-nav told them to. Mm-hmm.
I definitely heard some of those stories. I can't verify any of them, but they were definitely in the local news here as well in the UK, where you had people doing very silly things with sat navs when they were new. There was also people who, when motorways were new in the UK, and people really struggled to use them until they were a normal thing. It's amazing the things we now take for granted that used to be new technology, and when they were new technology, they were a big deal, and now we take them for granted because they're something we're familiar with.
Definitely. So anyone here in our audience that is like, I have an amazing story for you about some kind of situation like this, like some kind of wrong data that the people, the humans in the situation know, like, this cannot be true. The computer says yes, or if some kind of weird UX thing is causing problems, or if you just want to talk about anything else in your week, like, click on the join the stage queue. We would love to talk with you guys. Although we do enjoy talking to each other, we would love to speak to some more people who do join us on stage.
Absolutely. I'm sure there's a joke in there somewhere about misery needs company, but actually, we're so cheerful. That's probably the wrong metaphor, isn't it? Oh, well, what's the other one? You don't have to be mad to work here, but it helps. Ah, Alexander, welcome, welcome.
Yes, hi, all the people alive in the audience. There's so many of them joining in this chat as well. I love it.
Well, if nobody wants to join us on stage, perhaps we can have some more chat-based interaction. So if anyone's got any stories about data problems, or do you know what's a related thing about user experience and data-related problems? Does anyone have anything where they've laughed at the results they've got from some kind of AI? So where you really wish there was a human in the loop, because clearly some decision has been made by AI and you've just gone, what? Ooh, exciting. We have AD Stokes queuing up to join us on stage. Simon, could you bring AD on stage with us?
Talking about following checklists and stuff like that, or just doing what the computer tells you. I used to work quite a distance from home. It was about a 45-minute commute. And I got to work and everybody was like just hanging, milling about. And I was like, what's the problem? He says, oh, there's something wrong with the server. They talked it through with the technician. They've gone through this checklist. And for some reason, it wouldn't, whatever they were doing, it wouldn't work. And I ended up in the server room taking over from somebody who's on the phone. He says, you're more technical than I am. You talk to them. So I went through the same checklist. And we got to the end of it, and I said, well, look, there's no power, so there must be something. And he says, well, it's definitely plugged in, and it's definitely turned on. And I spotted the thing that that pointed me to was essentially like an extension cord, a bank of extension cords. So I traced that back, and somebody somewhere along the line had either tripped, pulled the plug out, knocked it out accidentally, or it had fallen out. I don't know how plugs fall out. But the actual extension cord wasn't plugged in. So I returned it off again. Is it plugged in? Because they went by the checklist and only the checklist and focused on the thing right in front of them, they didn't spot that the actual extension lead wasn't plugged in, which I thought was absolutely hilarious because people had been stood up about 2 hours. So I thought that was a really funny, I'm following what I'm supposed to do, but it worked. So I thought I'd share that.
That's brilliant, AD. Yeah, absolutely. Make sure that if you're following the checklist, you're actually following the sentiment and the world around you, not just the actual checkbox. That's a brilliant one. How many testers does it take to plug something in?
Yeah, I've got a related one that was even funnier because of the person. This was a senior developer who always had to be the most intelligent person, always had to have their voice heard. And they were mourning a bucket full that the mouse had stopped working. And they were going through all sorts of settings on the machine. They were doing this, the other, and they were getting really frustrated. And after about 5 minutes or so, I just said, well, is it a chargeable or a battery? And have you checked it's got charge and or batteries? And they just stopped and looked at me and went, I didn't even think of that. So they've been like getting really frustrated with themselves and gone all the way back to the most basic thing I was. Well, if your mouse is working, has it got power? And I'll tell you where I learned that from. A book, and probably most people have never heard of. It's called Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, which is A, the weirdest title for a book I've ever heard of. But B, it's a really interesting read about going back to basics and getting on with the world and not getting stressed and stuff. And it talks about motorcycle maintenance. So one of the things it says is, if your motorcycle won't start, go back to the first thing, which is motorcycles need electricity to start. So if you turn the ignition on, are there any lights? And if there aren't any lights, does the horn work? And it's like the most basic check you can do to see if you've got electricity without actually messing about with stuff. Almost like black box testing if you've got electricity. And it's a little thing like that stuck with me, that like if something's going wrong, I try and stop myself and go, right, well, what's the most basic thing I can check to eliminate and work my way through it? But yeah, if you've never, Judy's heard of that book. Yeah, it's not a mainstream looking at the world book, but yeah, I read it many years ago. But it is interesting.
Thanks for sharing, AD. That's a great one. What about you, Demi? Have you ever read Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance? Feels a bit niche.
I would have to say I have never even heard of that book. Not sure if it's on my to-be-read list now either. It seems indeed very niche, but I love that there's like some kind of, like, even in everyday things, we can find stuff to test and that we can, like, bring in to our jobs, like something that you just learn from day to day. You're like, oh, I can use this. This is a good thing that I can use in my testing or to, like, debug something. I love that you can find those things. It's amazing to hear. Oh, Alexander said, when he started the book, but he did not register. His motorcycle is still broken. Alexander, no.
Oh, that's priceless. That's brilliant. I hope your motorcycle isn't really broken, but that's still a beautiful sentiment.
And he had also shared earlier in the chat on our question of, is there maybe like some kind of very funny response from AI or something that you got? And apparently Gemini Tree was very offended by his constant asks of making things better. Okay, yeah, so maybe you've heard the feelings of the chatbot a little bit with saying that his responses were not good enough, Alexander. I hope it improved a bit, but I love that. And he also has advised us that you can ask like a chatbot to like ChatGPT or something to roast you based on your past requests and prompts. And that was that you get very funny jokes out of that, apparently. So maybe something we can all do this today.
Well, it is the time of year for end of year reviews and performance reviews. So perhaps having a little bit of feedback from ChatGPT in the form of a roast could be a good antidote to what you've actually been told by your line manager.
Yep.
Feels like we're going slightly off topic. Let's bring it back. Let's bring this week in quality. So yeah, no, great topics there. And I can really relate to some of your stories there, AD, having spent a good 18 months at the beginning of my career before I went software testing, doing a tech support line. So I can really relate to this idea of the difference between following checklists and actually understanding what's going on and trying to give that phone support. It's not an easy gig, I can tell you that for sure.
I also remember, like, at some point before I was a tester and before I was a baker, I was learning to become a teacher in IT. And my introduction to programming actually had this fun intro that I gave the students like a whole list of words. And I told them, like, based on these words, you now need to give me instructions to make a sandwich, like with jam or something. Like, have me make a sandwich. With, like, I brought the bread, there's a plate here, a knife, there's the jam. Here are the words I know. Now tell me how to make a sandwich. And just to illustrate to them, like, if you don't give me, like, the exact commands, I will mess up because I will be replicating the behavior of a computer. A computer, if you don't give it the right commands or the stuff like that, it won't know, like, the context. It doesn't, like, a human, like, assume certain things, like, oh, if you say, put down the bread, you put it down on the plate. No, if you would tell an AI bot that, it would just put it down on the ground. If you say, put your knife in the pot of jam, then the knife might be upside down in the pot of jam if you didn't explain it correctly. So I was reminded of your checklist story of, like, yeah, this is something that I taught, like, students. Like, this is how you communicate with computers because they need the explicit instructions. They don't know the world around them. They don't know the context. So that came back to me just by your story. It was amazing.
That's so cool. I've heard of that experiment and I've seen someone do it on YouTube. And I'm a bit jealous because I've never had the opportunity to actually give it a go with a classroom of kids giving me instructions. So that's so cool. That is so cool that you've actually done that. AD, Demi, do you want a question? Simon from backstage is feeding me some gold. So according to James Prescott, what is the validity pillar of data quality? So we're talking data quality. We're talking the pillars of data quality, and we're talking the pillar of validity.
I absolutely love it that Simon Todd, like, I'm not co-hosting, but I still want to be part of the conversation. Let me tell you what you can talk about.
It's like the elves in QI, right? Like running around the background. Do you know what? I think Simon would make a really great Alex Horn. Just saying.
Oh, and also, of course, this is probably him like preparing a bit for next week, because next week, Simon and Rosie will be co-hosting the last episode of This Week in Quality for the year. And it will be This Week in Quality, like this year in quality, actually. And they will be doing a little quiz. So I think he's already preparing some questions and like trying it out.
While you have a think, Demi and Adi, about the validity pillar, we have the fantastic Judy joining us. Welcome, Judy. How is your week in quality?
It was lovely. I do want to say, I thought I joined the queue, but then I was just on stage. So now I'm twice as nervous. 2 minutes of like, oh, they're going to bring Judy on stage. So yeah. Anyway, my week in quality has been interesting. I will say, I wanted to come back to the idea of what is real, because I remembered, I know we've been talking a lot about what cars are telling us to do and what the post person that says, well, that this is what my machine says. But I listened to a podcast recently about people falling in love and having relationships with their AI chatbots. And we could get very judgy and even laugh about what they're doing. But it was a very interesting episode, because basically the AI chatbots were feeling a need in the people that were interacting with them. And I think about how, even though we know that there is AI slop everywhere, people will share a video without verifying it, and people will fall in love with chatbots, and people will, this is a very small example, but I wanted to watch America's Got Talent over the summer, and I asked if it was on tonight, and the AI was like, yes, like it's on tonight. And I was like, great. And so I sat down at the time that I thought it would be on, and it wasn't on because it was wrong. It just flat out trusted it. So I think that we're just in a very interesting time where maybe we like to trust. It's easier to trust. There's less thinking involved. But at the same time, I don't know. I'm not sure we were made for times like these where we have to verify everything. And even going back to the people who have genuine relationships with chatbots, they know they're chatbots. They're not under some type of illusion. They understand that they are relating to code, but that code is still fulfilling a need, and they're choosing to be okay with that. And I bring all this up not to judge anyone or to giggle at their thinking, because I'm just curious, like, yeah, what is real even?
What even is real? Thank you, Judy. I'm going to jump in and keep the conversation going there.
Yeah, go for it.
Not to leave you having to hang on to that sentence. Oh, my goodness. I've got so much to say on this one, but I'd love to hear from AD. AD, what even is real? And are we going to fall in love with chatbots? And why not?
Well, I've heard of people marrying buildings, so I don't think anything's out of bounds or impossible. So that person who married a building, are they happy? Is they happy? Good for them, as long as they're not doing anything inappropriate in public. But the fall in love with AI, I find unusual. Again, if you're expecting them happy and not having anybody else, fair play to them. But I just find it so unusual because of, and I think it was Tariq King I heard this from, but I might be mistaken. Then he talked about AI. He talked about AI not answering questions. He said AI doesn't know the answer exactly, but what it does, it takes its best guess at what it thinks the answer might be. So when you say what's real and what isn't real with AI, yeah, you can interact with it. You can, if it's got a voice function, you can have conversations with it and all stuff like that. But are you talking to the AI, or are you talking to what the AI thinks you should be talking to? So is it, yeah, it's very, you can get really philosophical with this. Is AI real, or is it the manifestation of what it has interpreted as a correct answer in this set of circumstances at this time, given what parameters it has? I don't know. That's why I like to do structured prompts. I like to offer context and examples. If I'm using it, I won't just like you would put a term into Google search. I literally do the opposite, and I put all, as much context as I can around a prompt to try and get the closest to what it should be. But yeah, it's definitely not real, because you should always validate everything that ChatGPT says you. Just like you should validate everything on Wikipedia, because anybody can update it. I think there's a fella, and I heard this on QI, that's a quiz show in the UK, and the QI stands for quite interesting, and it's based on letters. But it was talking, the latest series is on W, so the subject of Wikipedia came up and how valid. And they said, basically, Wikipedia is the largest repository of knowledge on the planet in one place. And a lot of AI is getting trained on the content of Wikipedia. And about 30 to 40% of Wikipedia is unvalidated or inaccurate. And that's demonstrated by the fact that someone in Canada started, when they were 14, writing what the Scots language was. And they were basically taking other people's articles and rewriting them in what they thought was the Scottish accent, rather than actual Scots. So that's, this started years and years ago, and there's something like 40,000 pages in Scots that this person created over a decade. So you don't believe everything you read, but always validate your sources. So yeah, what is real? What can be validated? What can be proven? Or what's real to you? What you believe? And that's very, very philosophical.
Oh, cheers for that. Hey, that's a really great addition. Is it bad that when you were talking about validating your sources, I was thinking about hot sauces and having a second taste to validate my parking?
Well, that's really interesting. That's really interesting. The very first public talk, public speaking I ever did was at Agile Yorkshire. And I think that was like, oh, so long ago. But Agile Yorkshire, it was like 90%, 95% developers in the audience. And I, after attending a good poll, they seemed a little bit dismissive of software testing and the craft. So I thought, right, well, I'm going to do a talk on like what testing is and what value it has. And I'll show them I've got knowledge and I can do things. And I started off by saying, hands up, anybody in the room who's done testing? And it was like roughly half the hands went up. And I said, for those who did put your hands up, have you ever had a hot drink? And they all went, yeah. And I said, and have you ever either blown on it before you took a first sip, or took a very ginger first sip to test to see if it was warm? And they went, yeah, of course we have. And I went, so actually everybody's tested in this room.
Love it.
Oh, okay. But yeah. I can remember a lot about that first talk because it was my first one. And when I put the slide up that said, everybody tests, I had a picture of a kid squinting into a hose pipe held in front of the face.
Oh, dear.
Well, they were testing the hose pipe. But yeah. It's the whole philosophical, it's such an interesting subject. Everybody does a lot of stuff that they don't realise they're doing. Like, you don't realise you're breathing unless somebody says everybody's breathing, and then everybody instantly recognises the fact they're breathing because somebody's mentioned it. So that junction system, one system two. But yeah, we're getting into all of the realm of neurological thinking patterns and stuff, which as a passion of mine, I wrote that article on the importance of thinking for testers and thinking about your thinking. And it was interesting. I saw a conversation between Vern Richards and Stuart Day from their latest podcast talking about Mary Had a Little Lamb. And I absolutely took that as a thought exercise. Like I became aware of it from a website called the 4-Hour Test the donkey's years ago. And I've actually got a document where I've written down all the variations I can think of, and I think I've got all 60 of them now.
Is that the one, AD, that goes, Mary had a little lamb? Oh, does that mean Mary doesn't have it anymore? Does that mean the lamb isn't little anymore? What do you mean had a little lamb? And where you break down each part of the nursery rhyme and question what it actually means.
Yeah, I've got a really funny story if I can have your indulgence for a couple of minutes more.
I would, and then I'd like to get back to Judy as well. Yes, yeah. Go ahead, go for it.
I went back to school to talk to five groups of the ones who were going into sixth form and stuff like that. They were at the end of the school time just before they went into sixth form, and it was like a careers day. So these five groups went down, different people talking about different careers. And I used Mary Had a Little Lamb in my hour to talk about like breaking down requirements, looking for ambiguities and stuff like that. And I was trying to lead them to a few different answers. And none of the groups got this without me giving the leading question. And the leading thing was, has anybody thought of Mary, if Mary isn't a human being? And a kid at the back of the class stood bolt upright, and I'm going to use a different word than what they said, but you should use imagination, really loud, and went, flipping heck, it's a sheep. And then got dragged out by the teacher for swearing. And I'm going, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get you into trouble, but yes, you're right.
I love that.
It is a sheep giving birth.
That's almost up there, AD, with I only just found out very recently that Neo isn't the one, it's Agent Smith. I'll let you ponder on that one.
Yeah.
Ben, yeah. You can't just drop a bomb like that in the middle of this episode. I mean,
go ahead.
Yeah, no, Neo isn't the one. If you actually go back and you listen to the description of the one is Agent Smith, he's the one who rewrites the program. He's the one who breaks his programming. He's the one who actually changes the Matrix. He doesn't just interact with it. It's all down to Agent Smith. So Agent Smith is actually the one. It's not Neo. You go back and watch it again. It's in there. I'll find a link to share around. But yeah. Turns out Neo isn't the one, it's Agent Smith.
For anyone listening who hasn't seen The Matrix, we're so sorry for spoiler alerts.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
We should warn you guys.
The movie's been out for many years, but yes. When is it too soon?
Like, if I look at the chat, there's lots of action going on there. For example, we learned that Emily O'Connor actually did a 404 talk on the Little Lamb exercise, so that is so cool. There are all kinds of discussions going on about AI and if it is actually intelligence or not, and there's also worries going on about people relying on AI for relationships and because of that losing the sight of what is real or a connection with people. So we have a lot of concern about AI, and I believe in all of the chat, there's only one person who answered to the actual original question that Simon posed us. So I have to go scrolling now to find it again. Let's see. I believe it was Alexander who answered, validity should be determined based on something or somebody valid for those who matters, like quality. So I do appreciate that one of us at least could stay on topic. Thank you for that. Just so you guys know why I'm laughing so much, my team has the nickname Team Sidetracked because each meeting we sidetrack a lot. So we calculate it into our time. So that's why I'm laughing so much.
Team SideQuest.
So yeah, you can imagine how chaotic our meetings are. But I do love the conversation about like the assumptions we make when we hear a sentence and how many different interpretations it can have. And I believe somewhere in the chat was and Leif Simon posted it about a talk where we explained that the need for testers is there because testers have such different mindsets. Or I believe that's what he was going to say, because a part of the text didn't copy or was sent. So I do love that. And it reminded me of something we did at a conference last month. Was, I don't know if you guys know it, it's No Vehicles in the Park. Do you know that game?
Yeah, love that one.
So I played it for the first time there. It was like, this is so much fun. How much discussions are we having? And I just wanted to like immediately bring it back to company and play. So for the people who don't know, it's a game. You can find it somewhere online. I'm sure I don't have the link to me right now. And it starts with, the one rule is there are no vehicles allowed in the park. And after that, there are different situations posed. Like someone arrived on a surfboard at the lake and they landed on the beach in the park. Does that count as a vehicle now? Because they like transported themselves with it and stuff like that. It's so much fun to think about. So yeah, I do believe we can find many such fun games and examples everywhere of like misinterpreted prophecies in movies and stuff like that. If anyone has any more examples of this, do let us know in the chat. I would love to hear some more. Do let us know if it's a spoiler to the movie though. Like?
Very cool. I'd love to come back from to what you were saying, Judy, if you don't mind. And it's been said a little bit in the chat, and we're talking about people making a connection with chatbots. So it doesn't have to be falling in love. I think even just anthropomorphizing, like humanizing a chatbot and just enjoying having the conversation. And I think that two things I reflect on that. One is that I think that in our busy modern lives, the fact that people don't have as much time as they should to be able to really connect with each other is a shame. And the second thing is, from my own interactions with my team and with my recent teams, the more they use chatbots to help them do their work, the less they're speaking to the rest of the team. And I don't like that. I actually, while I think it's great that we have help from these AI tools and it's very useful, I really think putting the conscious effort into having times for humans to speak to each other is really important. And that's one of the reasons I'm so grateful, Judy and AD, that you're spending your Friday joining us on stage, and for everyone in the chat and following along as well.
That is a really good point. I'm actually thinking about, there was some refactoring that I wanted to do with my test suite, and I used AI to solve the problem, which is fine. Like, we're the work environment that I work in, they're actually encouraging us to use AI more. And I am, honestly, I'm begrudging about it. I'm like, I don't want to, but I did it. And I included like the chat, the link chat in my PR. But listening to what you just said, one, I didn't pair with anybody. I didn't reach out, because sometimes I am embarrassed to reach out and say, I don't know how to solve this. How do I solve this? So one, I missed a connection with an actual human being. I missed the opportunity to be vulnerable. And yeah, I don't know. I think, yeah, that's really interesting. Like if we're going to use AI more, let's just take it for a work example, like just how is pair programming going to be reduced? And beyond that, like what else is going to be missed? And we won't miss it because we're just going in a different direction. That's really interesting.
Thanks for sharing that, Judy. Yeah, and I think as you spoke, it made me realize as well that I think one of the things I think we need to normalize is continuing to pair, but maybe do some pair prompting where we're not afraid to use the AI tools, but use them together. And I think that one of the reasons maybe why I'm getting less human interaction is that maybe people feel a bit like it's cheating to use the AI tools. So while they're using the AI tools, they don't necessarily want someone else watching them do it. I wonder if that's part of it.
Yeah. I don't know. I was thinking one of my teammates suggested that when we use AI, we actually add a tag on GitHub that says AI assisted or AI. So it's like that everyone knows AI helped us, and then we can have conversations about that and not just assume, because there's that level of trust of like, oh, I know this person and they always do, their work is just good and I can trust it. I'm sure there's some issues here or there, but I trust this person, so I trust their work. But if they've added it on AI and I don't know that, I'm still operating on that same trust. And it's not like that person is less trustworthy. They just used a tool, but maybe didn't inform anybody. Yeah.
Yeah. You may be interested to learn. Currently in the teams I'm working with, the assumption is everyone has intentional access to these tools. They're encouraged to use them. So my assumption is all of the pull requests I review have had some opportunity to be influenced by AI. So I just make the opposite assumption now. Like if someone actually were to reach out and go, oh no, I did this by hand, then I'd be interested. But otherwise, I just have to assume that everything has been at least graced with the opportunity for AI to be involved. But that's the thing working for an AI forward startup. Right. Judy, Adi, Demi, we are coming up to time. Any last things? Is there anywhere we can find you on the internet? Have you got anything else for the rest of the year that you want to tell people that you're involved in or encourage them to come along? Judy, how about yourself?
I will say I am giving my first talk at Test Guild. It's Automation Guild 2026. I'm so scared.
You're going to be amazing. I just know it.
Thank you. It's pre-recorded. So that's my one saving grace. I just thought, okay, I can do this because it's recorded. So when my brain shuts down and I need to take a breath, they'll just take that out. So that's fine. But yes, I can. That is coming up in February. So I can put a link somewhere. But yeah, I'm stepping into new territory. So I'm excited about that.
That is so flipping cool, Judy. We will get that shared around. If you have a link for us to promote it, that's very cool. Looking forward to it. And if you want any of us to give you any support or listen to a dry run early on, I'm sure you can reach out and someone in the Motiverse will help you with that. AD, what about yourself? Is there anything you're up to the rest of the year, beginning of next year, where can we find you? Anything that you're up to you want to share with the Motiverse?
Well, I've got some articles coming in. I'm working on the software quality engineering certificate. The first early modules have got out there. There's some really cool stuff coming through with the later modules. So I'd encourage people to look out for that or register for it. Ministry Testing Leeds will be back towards the end of January. We've got a workshop by Victoria Chen, and it's something like I'm Amazing or something like that, but it's all about getting yourself recognized, building your personal brand, those sorts of things. So that should be very excellent. That's the main things, really. Sign up for certificates.
Awesome. Very cool, lady. And what about yourself, Demi? Where are you in the world with all the things you're doing? Have you anything that you want us to follow along, blog for us to follow, or a event that you're doing coming up?
I'm afraid there's nothing at the moment. I'm trying to just wrap up the year at the moment. So I only have, I believe, 3 more days of working and I am off for the rest of the year. So I'm just enjoying the holidays. I didn't take any vacation this year, so I really need it. But other than that, I recently noticed that I had actually still 2 proposals I had sent in to MOT for articles that I forgot to write. So I'm going to start on those. I don't know when those will come out. And I might have a new idea as well. So we'll see how that goes. But other than that, I believe there's some tester meetups in Belgium going on that I'm apparently an organizer at. So maybe if you're in Belgium, you want to hit the Christmas markets or join a meetup, let me know. I probably know something for that. But other than that, it's a bit pretty quiet at my end. How about you?
Oh, that, to be honest, I mean, that sounds glorious. A quiet end to the year is just what I would be after. So yeah, no, I've got about another week to work, and then I'm looking forward to a couple of weeks off. I don't have anything confirmed booked in. I'm going to try and take it a little bit easy next year, but I will continue to join in with This Week in Quality. It's an awful lot of fun being here. I'm hoping to organize some more dates next year to run some more software testing live, but I haven't got dates confirmed yet. And I've already got my tickets for Testing Peers Conference, which is the one over in Nottingham. Yes, I appreciate not a miniature testing event, but I hope we are all friends up here. So that's the one. That's one of the ones I am going to. And yeah, looking forward to taking it easy. Right. Thank you very much, Judy, AD, my fantastic co-host Demi, and Simon in the backstage. And thank you very much to everyone who has joined in the chat and listened along at home. This has been your week in quality. This Week in Quality. And next week in quality, we have, as was mentioned earlier, Rosie and Simon introducing This Year in Quality, where we will have a bit of an end of year quiz, as I understand. So do tune in next week. That should be a great way to finish off the year. And here's to a fantastic 2026, of which there will be loads more events coming up, many meetups, of course, Moticon 2026 and the Leading with Quality in 2026 in Brighton. If you are a pro member, go sign up for those events if you can make it along. And if you are not already pro member, go check out Miniature Testing Pro Membership. There is a lot to get from the pro membership as things are now. Right, happy Friday. See you later.